Anthony, I just wanted to welcome you to the show, and I really appreciate you, you know, sharing your evening with us and kind of talking to us. And I'd love for you to share your backstory to our audience.
Hey, thanks for having me. So, yeah, my name's Anthony Bryan. I'm from London, England. So a little bit about me. I was just your kind of average sporty, active child, always running around, always playing football, being very active. And then I used to get really bad headaches. And no one could work out what these headaches were. They thought they were migraines. And they just gave me kind of medication and sent me on my way. The doctors thought it was just headaches. These headaches got worse and worse. And after a few months, my parents thought, this isn't right. We need to go and get you properly checked. So they went and got me checked, and I had a brain scan. And they found that I had a brain tumour the size of a golf ball. So they found that this tumour, immediately to remove this tumour, otherwise I wouldn't have survived. When I had this operation, I suffered a stroke. So I lost the use of the left side of my body. So I was supposed to just have this operation just to remove the tumour and go back to a normal life, but it kind of totally changed my whole life and turned it upside down. And doctors said to my parents, unfortunately, he'll never run or be very active ever again. But I was just a really stubborn child. If you tell me you can't do something, I'll be like, yes, I can. I'll show you what I can. But fast forward 20 years, I ended up representing England at the cerebral palsy World Games, and I won gold medal in the 800 metres to, wow, I actually can do things. And I started to think, if I thought that was impossible, how much further can I push myself? So then I started looking at 10K, 5K runs and 10K runs, and I started completing those, and I was like, can I push myself further? And this doesn't happen straight away. It took me years, but literally this year in April, I thought, what's the biggest running challenge there is? What running challenge can I do that really proves those doctors wrong? And I said, it's got to be the London Marathon, because that's one of the biggest running challenges in the world. So I put my name down to do the London. Even now, everyone's telling me, you can't do it. It can't be done. You will injure yourself. You will really hurt yourself. But I just needed to go out there and for myself to see if I could do it. And I ended up not only completing the London Marathon, but I broke the Guinness World Record for the fastest marathon with a hemiplegia, which is you can't use one side of the body. So I really kind of just, my whole mission was to prove the doctors wrong. And I think I've kind of achieved that now.
Yeah, I think you've achieved it and then some, right? Because you're still going every day, which is the great thing to see. And I love seeing people that have had unfortunate circumstances happen and then they get back out there and prove those doctors wrong, which is, it's always a great thing to see. And, you know, I know we were talking earlier and I had a kind of a question to start, but I actually love that you brought up the marathon record. And I'd kind of would really appreciate you elaborating more on that. Like, what was it like training? What was your mindset going into it?
Before the marathon, I was looking up different times what people have done. So I thought, let me just have a look at disability, what disability records there are. And there was amputee records, vision impaired records. And there was one which was hemiplegia, which is what I've got. You can't use one side of the body. So I thought, oh, interesting. What time's he done? And the week before that, I'd done a half marathon just to see what I could do. And I did the half marathon in 2 hours, well, 1:57. And so I looked at what time he did. And his time for the marathon was 5 hours and 50 minutes. And I was like, surely if I can run a 2 hour half marathon, I can get under 5 hours 50. That was my thinking anyway. I hadn't done over half a marathon ever. And the further miles you go, the more your body is just battered and you can't sustain that speed that you do at the beginning. And during the marathon, it was brutal. So my training, my longest run was 18 miles. And people were saying, that's enough. You don't need to do any more. So I didn't do any more than that. When I got to the 18th mile in the marathon, when I got to 19th mile, I got cramp in both my legs and it was excruciating. And I still had 8 miles still to run. And I stopped and I just couldn't move my legs. And I had a pacemaker, my guide runner with me. And he was going, "And I think we have to pull out here. Like, literally, my job's to keep you safe. And right now you're in pain." And I was like, "No, we just have to keep going." I wanted that world record so much just because to show those doctors what is achievable. So that was my kind of drive to get to that finish line. So I said to him, "No, we just have to keep going." I literally hobbled for the next 7 miles and I kept getting cramp every here and there. So I kept stretching my legs and my miles were going slower and slower and slower. We got to the last mile and my guide runner goes, "Am, you've got 10 minutes. If you want this world record, to go now." To start running as hard as I could, I picked it up. Normally a 10-minute mile was pretty easy for me to do. I can run 8-minute miles, 7-minute miles normally. So I started picking it up. We got to the last stretch where you can see the finish line. It's along the mile. And he turns to me and goes, "And you've got 1 minute. Give it everything now or regret it for the rest of your life." And I don't know what, it just a switch flipped. My legs were in agony, my body was in pain, but I just started sprinting for my life. I'm weaving in and out of people, bombing it as fast as I could. And just about, I don't know how my legs held on for me, because every time I tried to put a bit of speed in, I was in pain and cramp. But I got to that finish line and it was 52 seconds to spare. And that feeling was just like, wow, I've done it. It was an absolute journey within a journey. But yeah, I just had to get to that finish line and make it happen.
Yeah, and I love how you said it was a journey within a journey, right? It's like you went on this like revelation road in your head, having to go through
Yeah.
that, and then you had your guide, but then you're like, "I did this, I made it." And so finally, making that, setting that world record, what was the sensation like? Can you describe that?
When you got to the finish line, obviously you got the big time on the top of the finish board, and that time starts when the elite runners go. So it's completely the wrong time for anyone that finishes. So I'm looking at time, I'm like, no, that's not the finish time. I'm looking at my watch on my hand. I started it a bit later because I forgot to start my watch. So I'm looking at the watch, I'm like, no, that's not the right finish time. And my guide runner, his watch wasn't working properly either. So he's like, "I don't know what the finish time is." So we didn't know we got the record. So we're like, "I don't know if we have, I don't know if we haven't." And so my brother was on the sideline. So we walked over to him. And because there's so many people there, the app that tells you the finishing times, his app is frozen. So we're like, "What's going on?" And there's like a Guinness World Record tent. You have to walk over there and give your name and they tell you what's happened. So we walked over and they're like, "What's your name?" I was like, "Anthony Bryan, 744Z Marathon." And they were like, write it down, and they just went, "New Guinness World Record." And I was like, yes. And that moment just made all that pain just worth it. It was just because at times I was thinking at marathon, I'm not going to get to that finish line. It was just pure, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other, and you'll be one step closer to the finish, one step closer to the finish. That's all I kept thinking, because if I kept thinking I can't get there, I would just stopped. And I would have been so down and depressed and angry at myself if I hadn't got to that finish line. So I had to get there.
Yeah, and I think that's an important description, right? Because you were like, if I didn't make it, I was just going to be down and depressed. Because as an athlete, if you don't make that cutoff time and you set out to do this goal, I mean, that's soul crushing in its own way.
Oh, yeah, I would not have even wanted to admit that I took part in a marathon. I would just hidden away. Yeah, it would have been literally soul crushing. Yeah. But now I've got this plaque on my wall now that has a Guinness World Record and my name and the year. And someone said to me, "You realize you've now just put your name in history for the rest of time." And when you put it like that, it's like, wow, that's an incredible achievement.
Yeah, that's one in a million. A lot of people don't get to do that. So congratulations on that, your success.
Thank you. And so this year I'm looking to do the London Marathon again. And now I'm going to try and break my own record. I'm going to, now I know how it feels and what I need to do. I think because of my disability, I need to be putting extra miles than a normal person. So I only trained up to 18 miles and all my issues came up after 18 miles. So I think if I can train more beyond 18 miles and get my body used to that, then I can stop all those cramps and stopping to stretch and things like that. If I can do that, then I can get to that finish line quicker. I just know there's more in me. And what I enjoy doing is find out what I'm really capable of, because you never really know what you're capable of. People will try and tell you, you can't do this and you can't do that, but it's down to you what you can and can't achieve.
Yeah, and that's what I feel a lot of people are struggling with, right? Is just listening to other people tell them they can't do something, so they believe it, or they just subconsciously believe it and tell it to themselves like that.
Or people just be like, yes, I'd love to do that, but it's just too difficult. It's doable, but you have to put the work in. A marathon's impossible if you don't do the training, but if you do the training, it's doable. Anyone can do a marathon, whether you walk it, you run it, or jog it. But it's doable if you do months of preparation for it. Anyone can.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Preparation for success, that's all it takes. And you know, you're talking about now you're ready to set, hopefully beat your record. And given the experience you had going into your first one, you have bad experience now from your first one with the cramps and things like that, so you can go back and restructure your training. And I think what's probably going to help you too is that you're a personal trainer, so you have all this exercise science information that's really going to up the ante when it comes to training.
Yeah, and the difficult thing is, if you look up marathon training programs online, there's millions of programs for your able-bodied average person. But obviously with me, I can only use one side of my body. So because I'm using one side of my body, I'm burning through double the amount of energy of a normal person. So I need to, I can't read from a program from another person. I'm totally kind of tearing up the rule books and writing a new script and learning. So I have to learn about my body and then create something that's never been created before. So for me, I was looking it all up. I did loads of research into it. Because I'm using one side of the body, I'm burning through so much more energy than a normal person, because the right arm and right leg is doing double the work. So I would have to eat double the amount of calories. So for the marathon breakfast, I had 4 bowls of porridge. When I was doing my training, I was having like 8,000 calories a day, which is a huge amount. And you would think most people would be pretty overweight eating that much, but my body was just burning through all of it. It's actually crazy how much fuel the body needs. And like, if you fuel it properly and learn about your body and learn what it needs, it's absolutely incredible what your body can achieve.
Yeah, that's the hard thing, right? Is proper fuel. But I think what's really cool that I like to pull out from what you just said is you're basically rewriting the rules, right? You're designing real-time programs for someone with hemiplegia or some type of paralysis on the left or right side that wants to go run, that maybe wants to do a marathon or even ultra runs, 5Ks, it doesn't matter, but you're a pioneer in that. How does that feel?
I didn't even think of it like that. I was just kind of creating it for myself. And then actually in the future, I could probably look, I've created this for myself, but you have the same disability as me, so it would work for you as well. Because out there, anyway, it hasn't really been done. So for me doing this, then I've created something new and it could help loads of people. The amazing thing after the marathon, I did have loads of messages from people with hemiplegia or families and parents with kids that have hemiplegia. And they said, absolutely amazing achievement. Thank you for so much for publicizing what you do, because you've given us hope for our child, to what they can achieve. And you've given my child a role model, someone to look up to, which is what my mum said to me when I was younger. She said, be the role model you needed when you was a kid. Because when I was a kid, you never saw disability, or I didn't know any other people with disabilities. So to have someone like me when I was a child would have really helped.
Yeah, I think that's some really good advice and a way to live your life, right? Is be the role model you wish you had. And so that's definitely good advice, especially like you said, growing up and you were the only kid with a disability or adaptation, however you want to describe it. But what I think is another thing is you publicizing this teaches people with some form of adaptation, you know, or life change, that kind of a philosophy I like to say, especially in physical therapy, is movement is medicine. And so I think that's what you're publicizing, is like, yes, you ran and set this world record. Anybody can do phenomenal things, but you're showing people that like, hey, I can move. This is like the great thing. And not only are you setting records, but you're also educating people because you're a personal trainer. So when it comes to exercise, you understand the importance of it across all populations.
Yeah. And I only became a personal trainer because when I used to go into a gym, all I saw was able-bodied trainers and able-bodied people in the gym. There were no people with a disability in the gym. And when I used to go gym, no one knew how to help me. So I used to think, how can I make this exercise work? I used to tie my hand or my arm onto the bar, and I used to do kind of cable chest press and things like that. And so I thought, if no one else is doing this, then how can other people do it? And I used to watch people in wheelchairs coming to the gym, used to come with their carers. And the carers weren't trained in the gym, so the carers just used to sit them on the bike and leave them to it. And I was like, but they could do so much more. They just need the right advice and help to do it. So just by seeing that experience, that I decided to go and do my personal trainer qualification. And I qualified as a personal trainer in 2011. But what I found was no job would give me a gym. No gym would give me a job. I went to my first job interview and I was like, I do this and I do that. And they were like, yeah, that's amazing. But you're not what we're looking for. You haven't got the experience. So I was like, okay. So I went and volunteered at the gym. I went to volunteer at the YMCA and they trained me up, got me teaching classes, got me more confident in the gym, but still job interviews were turning me down. And I went through about 30 to 40 job interviews and I had experience now. And I've been teaching classes and actually been doing the job voluntarily. But gyms weren't giving me the chance to work in a gym or giving me a job. And eventually I went to one job interview and I pushed myself really hard. We had to do a circuit class and I pushed myself harder than anyone else. And I really outdid everyone. And we got to the interview afterwards and he just said to me, look, I'll be honest with you. You can't lift weights with two hands. How do you expect to teach others? I was like, yeah, but I can do it one hand and I'll do it my way and I'll talk people into how to do it correctly. And he just said, yeah, I don't believe it can be done like that. But I was like, but I've already been doing it. I've been doing it in my voluntarily job role. And he said, yeah, no, doesn't work. So I ended up giving up in work trying to get a job in a gym. It was literally, they were just picking up me because I had a disability. Just because I've never seen someone work in a gym with a disability. I was probably one of the first, well, in my area anyway. But I just kept trying. I actually gave up at one point, thought, there's no point. I just got a job in the supermarket. And I worked in the supermarket for 3 or so years. And eventually I got a job just working on reception in a gym. And I thought, I'll get a job in a reception just to see how it goes. But I still hated it. I wanted to be on the gym floor, helping people train, change people's lives, and helping people with disabilities to get into the gym. And there was this one day where one of the class instructors couldn't make it in for her class. And the manager was worried. She was like, what am I going to do? All these people have turned up. So I said to her, look, I train classes. I've been doing this. I'm a personal trainer. I can do it for you. She was like, oh, thank you so much. Go and do it, please, please. So I ran upstairs and I got all the music ready. I walked in. I was like, my name's Anthony, this, this and this. I've been doing this and that for so many years. I've probably been teaching classes for about 3 or 4 years by that point. But I walked in and there was about class of about 30 women. They all looked at me and went, what? You're teaching? I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been doing it for so many years. And as I turned around to put my music on and get everything ready, I could hear the conversations behind me. They were all saying, oh, no, I don't want to do his class. I actually want to do a workout today. I want to go to the gym instead. And I could hear them all talking, but I thought, just ignore it. And I stood up, and I turned around, and out of 30 people, I saw 20 of the people had left and walked out. And I thought to myself, ignore those that have gone. These 10 people have stayed. Give these 10 people the best class they've ever had. So I pushed myself really hard, made them work really hard, was loud, vibrant, energetic, gave it everything I could. And at the end of class, they went, wow, that was a really great class. They actually said, you're probably better, even better than the original teacher. I was like, oh, thank you so much. It actually turned out that that teacher had to be off sick for a few months after that. And the manager comes to me and goes, please, can you teach that class every week for now? I was like, yeah, love to. And after a few weeks, words was spreading around the gym that this class was really good. And after a few months, my class was fully booked and people were complaining that they couldn't even get booked onto my class. So it just kind of shows you, if you never give up, good things can happen. And that was my kind of footstep to get into a job in the gym, because a few months later after that, the manager came up to me and said, look, there's a gym instructor role coming up with personal training. Do you want to do it? I was like, yes, this is what I've been waiting for. This is what I want. And I've been there now for the last 4 or 5 years doing it, and I really enjoy it. I help people in the gym, and I've started to kind of integrate people with disabilities into the gym. For example, during lockdown, everyone was staying inside, but all you heard on the news was, oh, the poor vulnerable, the poor people with disabilities, they can't go out, they can't do anything, what they're going to do. So I saw people doing exercise classes on YouTube, like Joe Wicks, but no one was doing it for people with disabilities. So I thought, why don't I be the guy, the Joe Wicks guy for people with disabilities? So I set up a YouTube channel. And I did chair workouts for stroke survivors, people in wheelchairs, and older adults. And I did it every single morning at 9 a.m. And I actually ended up having 2,000 people taking part in my class live, which was absolutely incredible. And then when the gyms reopened, I went to the manager. I was like, look, I've been doing this and that, live classes, this is how many people I've had. And he was like, let's recreate that in the gym. So I set up a chair workout class and it was an absolute hit. I have so many people booking on. I have a waiting list of about 20 people for every class. So I started off with one class and people complained so much that they couldn't book on that it went into two classes. I now teach 9 chair workout classes a week. And it's still fully booked and have a waiting list. So one day I would love to create my own gym and have it for people with disabilities, older adults, and have it as a gym where it's not just for your average person. Well, it could be for average person, but everyone together. It's a community to work out together. That's the dream.
Yeah, man, that's a wonderful story. Like, just seeing the evolution of not giving up because you want to be a PT to help people. And then look at you now. You started something during COVID, and then you just basically created a whole new program for your people at your gym. You've got a wait list. I think that's a great lofty goal, too, is to build your own facility and have people come in. That's a hard feat to do. So congratulations on that. That's awesome.
And that's another realization of, don't let people tell you can and can't, what you can and can't do. Like the guy who had that gym said, it can't be done like that. And I teach able-bodied classes and classes for older adults now. So I teach legs, bums and tums and HIIT and circuits. And I am probably the only one, well, definitely in my gym, I'm the only one with disability that works there, but I've never seen anyone else in the London area that works in a gym with a disability. So it's all about getting those people in and getting those people comfortable in that environment, because people that I talk to with disabilities say they don't go to the gym because they feel intimidated. So, and you shouldn't feel intimidated, because half the people that go to the gym are going there to fight their own battles and improve their insecurities. So everyone that goes to the gym has insecurities.
Yeah, that's a perfect explanation, right? Like, we all go to the gym because we have insecurities. Like, everybody in there has them. But then what also a lot of people will find out, and I'm sure there are people that are listening will have experienced this before, and if you haven't, I hope you get to, is when you go to a gym, you find a community, and sometimes it's the biggest, baddest guy, or the guy that looks the scariest is like the nicest teddy bear of a human
being. That's it, yeah. the biggest guys are like the nicest guys, the softest guys.
Yeah,
and they're fighting their insecurities as well.
Yeah, and they just want you to get a workout because they know the benefits of it. Again, it just circles back to the movement is medicine. And so that's awesome. I really appreciate you sharing that story of the evolution of your chair fitness classes. That's really incredible.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it's going to grow on from that. So that's where I am at the moment. I've got 9 classes a week and really enjoying them. And every time I go on holiday and come back, everyone's like, oh my God, we've missed you so much. Thank God you're back. So it's really nice to be appreciated like that. And I know that I can make a difference to these people, because when I go on holiday, there's no one else that covers these classes. So I'm the only one that does these for this kind of, what do you say, generation, or not generation, but community of people.
Do you still continue the online stuff too? Or do you think you might get back into it to kind of help alleviate that?
After lockdown finished, I went back to work in the gym, so I've kind of like, I haven't got as much time anymore, so I kind of just stopped it a bit. I probably should get back onto it again. Yeah, so I'm probably missing something there. Get back onto it again.
Yeah, and I think because I don't know your schedule, right? I'm just guesstimating, but I think, you know, if you had like one set time a day that doesn't interrupt your other classes, yeah, you could definitely do it. And then that way you're allowed to impact more, even people across the world, because I think that's the beauty of YouTube, is you can just reach out and touch someone across, you know, if you want to say across the pond, or you want to say in another country. That's an incredible thing about
this. That'd be amazing, yeah.
Connected world.
Yeah, that would be amazing. So I probably should look into doing that again.
And so I'm kind of curious, like, you know, given all your life experiences, and we probably just talked about it, what do you think really gives you an advantage over other personal trainers, you think, especially when it comes to all types of clients?
The fact that I can think outside the box and adapt exercise and do it different ways. A lot of personal trainers only have kind of one set way of training, because that's the only way they know. Whereas I have to think outside the box. Okay, so I want to lift the bar, but I can only use one arm. So how can I do it? Or I want to work my pecs, but I can't use the hand. How can I do it? So I've kind of learned all these different ways to get these muscles activated, but outside of the box kind of. So you might think skipping for someone with one hand is impossible, but I've learned, no, it's not. There is actually ways of doing it, of adapting exercises. So what my advantage for me is I can adapt any exercise or any workout and make it suitable for that individual. Whereas a lot of trainers, they'll just have one workout and they'll make everyone do it. And if they can't do it, it's tough. Whereas kind of, you have to kind of suit that individual's needs and make it suitable to them, make it work. And what I think people like about me in my classes is that they can relate with me, because I'm doing all this exercise with added difficulties. And they look at me and think, if Ant can do it, then I can do it too.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful subconscious message too, right? And it's not like you're throwing it in their face. You're just like out there performing, doing your thing. But then you go and have that conversation with them and teach classes. And they're like, okay, yeah, I can do this.
And what they love is every week they're like, oh, so what adventure are you on this weekend then, Anthony? And I'll be like, oh, I'm off to so-and-so to do a marathon, or I'm off to so-and-so to do a half marathon. Or recently I just went to Texas to compete in the CrossFit Games. And I actually finished eighth in the world. So, and they kind of love those stories.
Congratulations, Anthony. That's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah.
How was your first experience in Texas at the CrossFit Games?
It was a massive experience. So to go to the CrossFit Games is the top 10 adaptive athletes in the world. And you go to Texas for 4 days and you have two workouts every day. And the winner of the whole competition is who's done the best over the 4 days. For me, I was up against people who had had strokes or brain injuries. But for me, I can only use the one hand. And the other guys were using two hands. So when it came to the heavy lifting, I was at a disadvantage. So those guys beat me at the heavy lifting. But when it came to the cardio, I was beating them. So it kind of evened it up a bit. But it was such a crazy experience, working out in like 37 degree heat. But what was amazing was, no matter how good or bad you were, every athlete there was so supportive of each other. So I think there was one workout where I was really struggling to lift these weights. And at the end, all the athletes just came around me and started cheering me on and spurring me on. And it was just a really great experience to be part of.
Yeah, you see that in competitions, but it is nice when everybody gets around and supports you.
Yeah. And it's probably the one place where you'll never see so many disabled people with like six packs and muscles popping out of anywhere. You see people in wheelchairs with like the most incredible muscly arms and six packs. It's like, wow, incredible.
Yeah, it's very hard to dispute the quality of exercise for CrossFit for the adaptive community. It's an incredible sport.
Yeah, it is amazing. And it's probably the one place where you'll see a disabled person collapse, fall to the floor in exhaustion, but you won't see anyone be like, oh my God, are you okay? Everyone else will be like, get up, keep going. There'll be no sympathy. It's like, get up. And I love that. I love that.
I bet there's some wild times at the CrossFit Games, aren't there?
Some crazy things that you'd be like, how is he doing that? So one of our exercises, one of our workouts was a rope climb. And obviously the other guy's using two arms and I was doing the rope climb with one arm. So after when everyone went to me, like, how did you do that? I says, I don't know. It's like, I have to make it happen.
You just have to adapt like everything, right?
Exactly. Adaptive CrossFit. That's what you just got to adapt. Adapt is the key to everything.
So going from like, you know, working in like what you, I guess you could say, a majority able-bodied gym community, things that you're kind of surrounded on. And I know you still have your classes, but what was it like being totally immersed in that environment with other adaptive people in the CrossFit Games for you guys?
It was amazing because everyone just supported each other. And even when you're doing your workouts, even other athletes will come around to support you. It's just great it's just a great community to be part of. And it's something, unfortunately, like all those athletes are dotted around the world, but it'd be great to be part of in your everyday life as well. Because they understand how hard you have to push yourself beyond those limits because every single one of them is doing exactly the same.
Yeah, and I've been told by other athletes too, like it's uncomparable sometimes to like be around other people that like can help you with some form of problem that you have with your adaptation. And you guys can like come together and be like, oh, I do this and it works out pretty well. Or I do this. And I think that's what a lot of people like to stick with. And then again, it's that community.
Yeah, and we all have different experiences. For example, one of the guys there, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to lift, bench press the bar with one arm. He's like, oh, you use these straps on your wrist to hold your wrist straight. He's like, do you want to borrow mine? I was like, yes, please, yeah. So he lent me a strap, which massively helped. And then when it came to pull-ups, I've practiced loads of pull-ups. So I was really good at the pull-ups. But he can do as many pull-ups. So afterwards, he was like, "How did you do that?" I was like, "Oh, so I wear this strap on my wrist." He's like, "Oh." So I told him about that. He's like, "I want to get one of those." So it's just like sharing all our different experiences and helping each other improve to be the best that everyone can be.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you again for sharing all that. So, Anthony, man, we've just explored your incredible life and all your amazing feats, and I love just hearing everything about it. And it's been a great time. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to kind of backtrack, because at the beginning, you know, you were talking about growing up, kind of being the only child with some type of adaptation because you had the brain tumor that ended up, you know, with the surgery, you had a stroke after. And so for people that maybe are listening and have either A, been in a similar situation, or maybe are going through some form of situation like yours, what was your perception going through all that, including like the rehab and recovery and things?
So for me, I was only 6 years old, so I was only a child. And being bedbound and wheelchair bound and told you can't do this and you can't do that just kind of infuriated me. I was like, yes, I can, I will do it. But I couldn't at that time. I couldn't, but I just kept pushing myself because I wanted to do it. I had two younger brothers, and I just remember they were in the garden playing football and I was stuck indoors doing physio, and all I wanted to do was go out there and play again. So I just kind of made it my mission to try and get out there and just keep pushing myself to do it. I think there was a moment where eventually, after being in hospital for so long, I was allowed to go back to school, and I was just really looking forward to get back to a bit of a normal life. But for me, it just wasn't the same. Even though my friends included me in everything I did, it just wasn't the same for me. I just wanted to do what I used to have to do, but I couldn't. And at lunchtimes, teachers were too worried for me to go out in the playground in case I fell over and hit my head. So I used to sit inside at the classroom window, watching everyone running around, playing football. And at that moment, I just really began to hate who I was, embarrassed of who I was, ashamed of who I was. I was like, why has this happened to me? Why am I still alive? Why did I survive this operation? I don't want to be here anymore. And I really became down on myself. I became very shy, self-conscious. And at that time, I just really didn't want to be alive anymore. I really hated it. And I think what changed me is, I don't know, it didn't change me for a long, long time. I think, well, there was a moment at school where I was having a PE lesson. And we had a football lesson. And I was like, I'll go and goal. I can't run around, but I can go and goal and save the goals. And the teacher said to me, you can't go in goal, you need two hands to go in goal. Just like a comment like that made me stay away from sport. But it wasn't until secondary school, and we had a fitness session, and it was how many laps of the football field can you do in 12 minutes. And I just remember thinking, I can't come last, I can't, that'd be too embarrassing. So out of a class of about 30 kids, I just, as soon as they say go, I just ran as hard as I could. I didn't even like running then. I just ran as hard as I could because I didn't want to come last. And I just kept going and kept going and kept going. I was exhausted, out of breath, had a stitch. It was horrible. But at the end of it, I think I finished like 15th or 20th out of 30 kids. And I was the only disabled kid out of that group. And the teacher came up to me and said, that was amazing. How did you do that? I was like, I don't know, I didn't want to come last. And she said to me, have you ever thought about going into the Paralympics? I was like, no, what's the Paralympics? She said, it's like the Olympics, but for people with disabilities. You would be amazing at that. But because I was so self-conscious and shy of my disability, my reaction was, no, there's something I definitely don't want to do. Why do I want to do a sport that shows off my disability? So she said, let me talk to your parents. She called my parents in. And the first thing she said was, get that boy in a running club. Just get that boy in a running club. And so they were like, okay, we'll give it a try. And that's how my running started from that moment. former teacher just spotting something in me and pointing me in the right direction. And thankfully to her, that kind of opened up my eyes to what I could really do and really achieve. And I think anyone who's in a hard, tough time, because we all have hard, tough times in life, the way to get through that is just to keep pushing and make it step by step, because things will get better. And you just need to keep pushing outside your comfort zone. Outside that comfort zone is you're going to achieve great things, but it's not going to be just like that. It's step by step by step, and not giving up, and just keep going, see what you can reach. Because we are all capable of more than we could ever believe. I was told I'd never run or be very active again. Now I've run a marathon faster than anyone else with my disability, which is absolutely crazy. And I can do one arm pull ups and press ups and sit ups, and which is people. I was talking to a guy in the gym and I said, you need to do this and that. And he said to me, Anthony, you need to realize that. And this guy was able bodied. He goes, you need to realize that we're all mere mortals. You're superhuman. You can't give us exercises that hard. Which is like a massive compliment. But yeah, I really love that. So my message to anyone would be, don't give up. Keep pushing. See what you can really do. If you look at something and think, oh, that's impossible, I can't do that, just give it a go, because you really, really surprise yourself, because you might not be able to do it to the highest ability, but you can do it to a certain ability, and then you just keep practicing on that, and you will get better and better and better. It's just about practice, never giving up, and persistency, and keeping going. Resilience is one of the most important words in the vocabulary, I think. Resilience is just never giving up, being persistent, and then you will find new things out about yourself.
Well said, man. I couldn't have said it any better. That was incredible. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your journey and your insights with us. And I've loved just learning about the evolution of your life into, you know, personal training, going to the CrossFit Games, and then especially the story of you getting into running.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And yeah. If anyone wants to follow my journey, I am on Instagram at AntBrianFitness or YouTube AntBrianFitness or TikTok, because I put all my adventures and challenges and everything on there. So next year, I'm doing the London Marathon again. I'm going to try and break my own record. And then I'm going to try and go to the CrossFit Games again and try and improve on 8th in the world.
Heck yeah. I look forward to watching your journey. We'll definitely link down your Instagram below again and your YouTube. I'll definitely put that channel down there too, so people can like and subscribe to all your stuff. Awesome.